NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
What's up, my dudes?
Welcome back.
This is Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Wes. And we got a special guest today.
Hell yeah, we do.
Go ahead and introduce yourself, special guest.
I'm Kenzie.
Kenzie's going to hang out with us today, comment on these fucked up cases we got going on over here.
For the first time ever, which is awesome.
Fuck yeah. Yes. So you'll see probably Kenzie in this episode and in the next episode. So.
Potentially. Oh, and big news here. Our first time recording in person.
Thank God.
Since, like, forever. It's been so long.
Like, if you can still stay inside and self-quarantine,
yes.
Because this is by no means ready to go out yet times.
No.
But...
And we're practicing social distancing safer at home.
Yeah.
Everyone.
But...
Obviously.
We had to get back to it, guys. We didn't have anything for you, so...
Yeah.
Yep.
Here
this
we are.
This is kind of a job for us now.
This is it.
Yeah. We just don't get paid.
No, we don't get paid.
We don't get paid. What's up with that, people? No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm really just kidding.
Okay.
That AdSense, though.
Who's going this week?
I got you guys first.
Fucking
and
cool.
I'm sorry. Firstly, for the shit I'm about to spit at you. No, I'm just kidding. But basically, this is about the Toolbox Killers. Just want to get that out of the way. A lot of you may know that name by term already. And I just want to say I'm not going into some of the gruesome details that are associated with these murders. Obviously, everything I'm about to say is gruesome, but I'm avoiding a lot of those real details just so you guys know, so you're safer to listen. It's still pretty bad. So, just like a disclaimer, if you are triggered by, you know, extreme violence, extreme sexual violence, you know, sexual assault on minors, and just the list goes on. So, very violent. If you need to, you know, go take a quick snippet at Google or something about these guys, but I'm going to cover them for you today. So, anyway, have you guys heard of these killers before? No.
Mm-hmm.
What? Okay, for some reason I'm confusing them with the person that...
Toy box killer.
The toy box killer. Oh my God. They're very semi-similar, interestingly enough. So there are recordings in this, and I'm not showing... Or you're not going to listen to those here today at all. And I kind of hope you don't ever in your life. And if you want to, like, why? 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 Like, that's not cool.
No.
Anyway, so of course I'm covering Mr. Lawrence Bittaker. He's one of the two.
It's a terrible name.
And also, like, for some reason, there's a misconception that these crimes were done by only one, since Lawrence or Larry.
Larry. That's a name choice.
Disgust. If he, you know, he's the most, I would say, has definitely more, you know, he's extremely violent compared to Norris, even though he's very violent on, like, a scale from 1 to 10. Bittaker's, like, an 11. Okay. And he is very notorious for his crimes. But there were two. And one of them is from Greeley, Colorado. What's up? No, just kidding. I'm sorry, but he is. Norris is. It's disgusting.
Fucked up people from here.
And I just want to say, separate from our reputation, I know we got a bad one already. Anyway, okay, so that's who we're covering. Oh, it's Ray Lewis Norris, by the way. No. Roy Norris. I'm going to fucking read it to you. Just his last name is only here right now. They became known as the Toy Box Killers.
Toolbox.
Because the majority of their instruments used...
Toolbox Killers.
Did I just say Toy Box?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Toolbox Killers.
Different.
Nobody say the
so
other
different.
One now. Yeah. Nobody. Toolbox Killers. They were named that, I'm sorry, because of the majority of their instruments used for torture and to murder their victims were, like, pliers and ice picks and, like, sledgehammers. Stuff that you normally would have in your household, okay?
Great.
Toolbox.
I know you're going to get into this later, but is this similar to the Axeman of New Orleans where it's, like, tools that the people owned? Or did they bring them? Okay.
No. I'm going to tell you right now, like, we have covered... And I personally have covered some fucked up people. But these are like, like especially bad. Like I could not listen to some podcasts. So most of my research is from the Worldwide Serial Killers channel, who covered like a PG-13 quote unquote version of this, where I didn't have to listen to their crimes. Murderpedia, obviously, and then the Serial Killer podcast, who is a really interesting podcast. Have you guys heard of that before?
No.
It's like a Norwegian host.
That's awesome. I love that.
But he read the transcription of the tapes, and I just couldn't. And it's really funny because he did it in his like Norwegian accent, and he was like pretending to be the girl. It's not funny now that I say it out loud, but it was funny to hear it. Anyway.
Right.
And on that note, let us take a look into the crimes and minds of the two most heinous creatures to walk this fucking earth, Lawrence Bittaker and Roy Norris. I knew it was Roy, not Ray. And, you know, take a look at these fuckheads on the web if you want to. They're disgusting. I can't look at them anymore because they're fucking trash. So starting with the depraved scum of a human being, Lawrence Bittaker, everyone, a.k.a. Pliers. That was his nickname. And he will sign off. Well, he did sign off. He's now passed away last month only. He died February 20th, 2020. What the fuck, right? 02-2020?
That's weird.
He's Satan incarnate. Like, I'm letting you guys know. I mean, like, Satan would be like, you're a pussy. And he'd be like, But anyway, so we'll get into him first. So before we get into this again, I just would like to provide a huge disclaimer. You know, don't go look at this. Like, this one's safe. I will let you know. This episode is safe. But when you go into the web, I can't promise you that you're safe from what you're reading. So, you know, just listen to my facts and don't do it on your own, I suggest. Anyway, so to say he murdered 5 girls from the ages 13 to 19, does not capture the nature of his true crimes, okay? He opened a macabre toolkit of torture, and then that included an ice pick, screwdriver, vase grips, pliers, a coat hanger, and he tape recorded screams. His goal was to keep his victims alive as much as possible, which is the worst thing.
Yeah, it's torture.
So pliers, Bittaker, everyone. Wow. He was sentenced to death March 24th, 1981, for 2 years after Bittaker's trial. The Los Angeles deputy had retired from this case, and he had claimed that he had reoccurring nightmares. I quote, "I would hear the girls screaming, and I was running to get them too late." And he still pictures what Bittaker did with the tools in his deadly trade. So, also John Douglas. Do you guys know John Douglas?
Mindhunter.
So he is the, he was a real person who did. His character is, what's his name, Bill in Mindhunter? No, it's the other one.
Yeah, it's the other one.
It's the boxy-looking man. Wait, yeah. No.
He's like Finn.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, he's
the
agent.
I don't remember his name. Yeah.
But John Douglas himself he's interviewed, you know, tops of the tops. Mm-hmm. Manson. Mm-hmm. You know, the list goes on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the Nightcrawler. He met Roy Norris while serving time together. Oh, sorry, not John Douglas. Bittaker and Roy Norris met while serving time together. Anyway, so, but John Douglas interviewed Bittaker and still said that it's probably the worst person he's ever interviewed before.
Damn.
In his life. Bittaker was the product of two people who did not want to be parents. They abandoned him at 2 years old. So he was adopted by the Bittaker family. Mm-hmm. Apparently, George Bittaker was in aviation, and the family moved around a lot. Oh, shocker. That happens common,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And although Bittaker had an IQ score of 138, he hated high school and dropped out of high school.
I feel like that's also very common. It's just
very smart.
Yeah, high school's awful, but this is a common thing we're starting to see more. Like, along with the moving and all that.
Especially with the intelligence, though. That's not an uncommon thing. Like, very intelligent people drop out of school because they're bored.
Yeah. Like, exactly. It's not uncommon for very smart people to drop out of school entirely. Like, not move on to go to college. So, but he was so smart that once he was in federal prison, Bittaker was given an exam to see if he could become a prison guard. And he scored the highest that had ever been scored in history.
That's scary.
What the fuck does that say about that? Right?
Wow.
Of course, after leaving high school, Bittaker began to perform a series of crimes, such as car theft, fleeing the scene of a hit and run, evading arrest, and also assault. He was in prison in the California Youth Authority until the age of 19. And after that, it was one of Bittaker's longtime homes for the rest of his life. one of the major crimes he had committed was an armed robbery gone wrong at a grocery store. And he was stealing a steak.
Just a steak.
Just a steak.
He's about to shoot somebody for a steak.
He shot someone for a steak. Like, no, he did.
He fully intended and he committed.
Anyway, it is here where Bittaker begins showing true signs of sociopathy and psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. A profound deficit of empathy and remorse for his actions. Okay, so this is where we start seeing it. And we're not the only ones. Like, he was in prison and, like, you know, that youth home for a long time, and people have done psychiatric evaluations on him. But yet, they always let him go.
Same with Kemper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's same with everyone, dude. It's, like, crazy. And I wonder it's because they're... I hate to say it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I won't say it. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, the first time he was released... Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. He was released from this crime in particular, although he shouldn't have been since he was clearly mentally unstable. They labeled him with psychopathy, and I think it was paranoia. Mm. Of course, not even a week later after he was released, Bittaker was arrested by the FBI for violating the Interstate Motor Vehicle Theft Act. I don't know what that is. Nope. So, but he violated it.
Yeah,
and
I
was arrested by the,
like,
FBI. It was serious
grand
if the
theft
FBI
auto,
had it,
but
right?
Also...
Across state lines.
Yeah, across state lines, because then the FBI needs
to
be involved.
Mm-hmm. So he was convicted to a federal reformatory for 18 months because they realized that he had more mental issues than he needed to be in prison. But he was convicted for that for about 8 months in 1959. Hmm. His behavior there got him transferred to a Missouri medical center where he was released after 6 months, which I don't know why. Again,
a lot of these people always get so little time in prison, it doesn't make any fucking sense,
and they don't, like, learn, you know, at all. So he didn't care, obviously.
Well, we have to think about time frame too, right?
Right,
like,
no, 59.
We didn't understand shit about, I mean, we still don't understand shit about human behavior or the brain.
This was,
you know?
So interesting, and they knew that, Janae.
Oh,
they
yeah.
knew that fact at this time, like, because yeah, this is really interesting. It's a very smart couple of people. But again, he got right back into trouble right after he was released. In December 1960, he was arrested in Los Angeles, most likely for the robbery, and was sentenced for about 1 to 15 years in state prison. So he's in California.
Yeah. Had a weird time.
At the fucking most difficult time this fucking country has ever seen in LA, along with, who is it? Oh my God, I'm gonna mention them here soon. It's like the Hillside Stranglers, was yeah. that who it is? Mm-hmm. And then the Night Stalker, and
the
then
original
these guys.
Night Stalker, not yeah. even
oh, right.
just Richard Ramirez. We're talking Golden
the original.
State Killer.
Yeah,
was
Golden
out
State
doing
Killer.
Shit.
Yes, yeah. So this is a fucked up time in yeah. LA. And I don't know why it was like that, dude. And it's the worst because this was also that, like, you know, hippie movement of, like, free love. So you get a lot of people traveling from all across the states from, like, very small towns, not used to a city, mm-hmm. and getting themselves into a lot of fucking danger. At this time, hitchhiking.
Yeah.
That was, like, the thing. It's so common. But anyway, so there was a psychiatric performed again on Bittaker, and it concluded that he was paranoid and borderline psychotic, again, with little control of his impulses. Despite these conclusions, he was released.
Why?
Again. After a robbery. Like, I just don't see how this is possible.
Like, this guy keeps going back to jail. Like, you keep seeing him in the system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And are none of these prisons, like, sharing files about his mental health?
Apparently, like, not.
Well, that's the thing, though. Again, with the time frame, like, even police departments didn't share missing persons
yeah,
files across
they didn't.
Jurisdiction.
No.
No, they don't share records.
And this is
you know?
A lot of, like... Because
then it would have saved them time of, like, evaluating yeah. him, and they would have seen, oh... My diagnosis has come up this many times in this person.
Right.
Maybe
yes.
we should do something about it.
It took them
keeps
years to
crimes.
Reach that conclusion, Gnomes.
Right, and yeah. it took many people's lives to reach that conclusion.
Yeah. But don't you think, regardless, if he had been in it so many times, they'd start to see a pattern and question it anyways?
You would think,
right?
Right,
yeah.
I don't know exactly why. But anyway,
Was it because he was in like different states or different locations, maybe?
Sometimes, yeah. He was definitely a county hopper and was not the same place for the longest time. Yeah. But this was like early on. This is like his petty crimes where like they escalated to a large extent if we were looking at a different time frame. Like if he did that this time, he would not be getting out. But yeah, no. Now, just to make you more frustrated, I'm about to list like a bunch more crimes that he did. So he was picked up again for 2 months after for parole violation and suspected robbery. Again, he doesn't have a source of income. He doesn't work, so that's all he does is rob. And then again in 1964 in October, the list goes on and on. And then again, it mentions the supermarket employee that he stabbed for the fucking steak. He put down his pants in San Luis Obispo. Anyway. He was then hired to be the manager of the Holiday Theater in Reseda. So he did have a job eventually. But yes, yeah, still sociopath, classic sociopath, psychiatric evaluations coming up with borderline psychotic, all that stuff, just to go back to being released again. And then he moved to L.A. permanently. He also enjoyed marijuana.
I mean,
just thought I'd throw that out there.
Nice. You just need to include that.
So, I haven't gotten to the part where he meets his buddy, Roy Norris. But anyway, let me tell you a little bit about Roy himself. Like I said, he was raised in Greeley, Colorado. And if you take a look at Roy, you know, he's got glasses. He's always been kind of like... From what I heard, he really had trouble interacting with girls, even at an early age. He became very nervous just talking to them. And he grew up in a decently normal family. He was just like a misfit and a troublemaker, a lot like Bittaker. But he, too, was rooted in fear and isolation. By the way, Bittaker would claim that he did those crimes because he didn't receive enough, quote, love from his parents.
That's bullshit. Mm. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, literally
life.
Said
I'm sorry.
That.
What?
Anyway.
No.
Like, okay, dude, you're not getting past us. You're not that manipulative. But yeah, at 17, Norris joined the Navy. Serial killer bingo, everyone. I get like 5 God. Points from this episode alone.
I was going to say, how full is your bingo card yet?
Basically one.
This one's,
yeah, classic. We just like anytime they know what I'm about to say, they just roll their eyes. and he served as an electrician during the Vietnam War, but he was medically discharged. Shut the fuck. After a couple months, because he had been charged with attempted sexual assault.
At least they discharged him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just hide it and keep him there.
Right. Yep. He also had a high IQ. But was diagnosed with schizoid personality disorder.
Interesting. Mm. Okay. That's like a lethal combination, it feels like.
It's a lethal combination. You are right about that. Okay, he was removed from others. Very uncomfortable in close personal relationships. Okay, like, Bittaker was his one and only friend throughout his life. He also lived with his mother.
Dun, All dun, of those dun. Things make sense for schizoid personality.
Yeah. So he was sent to an Aerostate hospital after that sexual assault attempt and spent about 5 years there. It was believed he was no longer a danger to health and the safety of others. Of course, they were very, very wrong.
Right.
As he was driving one night, he noticed a couple having an argument. He offered the woman, and I think he's in L.A. himself right now, too. He offered a woman... the woman a ride as she had separated from her partner after the argument. She denied his offer, and he became very angry with her. Got out of the car, started choking her with her own scarf until she became unconscious at this point, and did not put up much of a struggle when he tried to rape her. Now, that might have saved her life, because he was unable to complete his task,
yeah.
Because he was like... kind of phase that she wasn't fighting off, and then also became very scared.
Well, I just want to point out the choking is the first means he went to immediately to harm this person, and we know that, like, within domestic violence cases, even like choking is extreme. Like, that is intent to kill.
Oh, yes.
And like, we see that as like already top tier. You need to get the fuck out of there.
You gotta get
and
the
like
fuck
the
out
fact
of
that
there.
He went to that first,
right,
says a lot about how angry he's going to be in the rest of them.
And that's what's so interesting about this case, you two. Well, you all. Like, he is a sexual sadist, but compared to Whitaker, pales in what?
That's so interesting. Because he escalated first.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm seeing,
so
too. So
you think it would be
That's
higher.
What's so fucking interesting. Okay. Anyway. Sorry. No, this is what's interesting about this case is, like, later you're going to see how, like, these two had this really insane dynamic relationship of, like, I'll get into it later. I don't want to spoil it for you. But anyway.
Thus far, it already reminds me of, like, when we think about, like, Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Henry fucking Lee Lucas.
We should do that at some point.
I know, right? Unfortunately, she did not register his face as she was mostly unconscious during the attack. However, she saw his vehicle one day after the attack and memorized Norris's license plates.
Damn.
Brave motherfucker. Yeah. And she was able to identify him to the police. He received a prison sentence for this attack. And that's where he met Whitaker. So literally, Whitaker is like, Norris is, you know, he's kind of afraid going into prison. He is not necessarily your kind of fighting type of guy. But he meets Whitaker, who's definitely got that, like, tough guy on the block, like, attitude about him. Mm-hmm. And they begin to get to know each other and become really good friends. And they discover they have similar disgusting interests. It almost sickens me to say this out loud. But when it comes to their crimes, they enjoy dominating, raping, torturing teenage girls. So they built a most heinous plan once they were released from prison.
Good. Of course, though.
Yeah.
Oh, and just to, like, keep this in mind, too. Norris, like, claims that most of these conversations he thought were, like, fun and games. You know, like, just fantasies. Not real plans, you know? So a lot of this he'll say that Whitaker took the lead. But, like, I don't believe that for a fucking second. If anything, it's always the quiet ones who are the most manipulative and the most... Yeah, like, fuck you. You probably lived through Whitaker and you like that he's out of control and impulsive when you have the ideas and you're able to keep control. But anyway, so they planned to begin murdering together. Their goal was to murder at least one girl from the ages 13 to 19. They also planned to just generally kidnap, torture, and rape young women in L.A. They again wanted to know how long these girls could survive in their hell on Earth.
Damn it. No, what I wanted to point out was that it's reminding me of the, the Marsh killings with that couple where they were like, we're just going to fantasize about kidnapping and raping children.
Yeah. Right.
And they were like, oh, it's a fantasy. And they had all these plans. And then, like, he talked her into this. And then they went and committed these crimes.
Ian Brady and Myra Hindley.
Myra Hindley, yeah. So it reminds me so much of that, of, like, two people that found each other were already a little.
Right.
Fucked up, and then they made these plans and these grand ideas and then just followed them out.
Well, here's the thing. I think Norris has a lot less attachment to reality than Whitaker does. So I do believe him in the sense where he's saying that he wasn't, like, he didn't know
he wasn't there all
that
the way.
Was an agreement that they had made. But Bittaker's just a sociopath and a psychopath. He knows his actions. He knows right from wrong and chooses against it. Norris, on the other hand, I think he does too. He was never diagnosed with schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. It was just schizoid personality.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, and, like, schizophrenia is different.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, he does show remorse in a lot of his confessions. Okay. So I do think that it crushed him more when Whitaker, to this day, to his grave, denied that he did it. Hmm. So I do think he does have remorse. And he did know what he was doing during these actions. Whitaker was more attracted to younger victims, unlike Norris, who was more like, you know, he would attack an adult woman. But most likely, Whitaker received a sense of power from killing younger victims. Both he and Norris really just hated women altogether. They were afraid of women, so they went out after the most vulnerable age groups. Afraid of women, literally, that's what I mean. Like, they couldn't talk. When Whitaker was getting interviewed with Mr. Douglas, the woman in the room, he couldn't even look at her in the eye when she was speaking to him.
Wow. Do they have, like, other incel-y type ideologies?
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm picking up from
superficiality,
this.
You know, like, that you gotta look like this for me to rape you, wanna rape you. They've told that to one of their victims before.
That's
so fucked up, you guys.
Well, and, like, that just pushes the mentality that rape's about sex when it's not.
It's not about sex. It had nothing to do with sex, I'm sorry.
It's all about control.
Always.
Yeah, we'll get
every
to that
situation,
case.
It's about control in every sense of the fucking word. And these people, Whitaker, they thrive off of control. Like, that's what a sexual sadist is. The minute that they have you in their control, it turns them on. So it's especially dangerous in this situation because of that, like, level of sexual sadism. It keeps them wanting more. Mm-hmm. Okay, you realize, like, when these things happen, it escalates. Like, yes, they've killed one girl. It was awesome. They want that feeling a lot more now. Mm-hmm. And it's going to keep escalating because of their sexual sadistic tendencies. Norris was released on parole in January 1979. You realize that that was a 9-year sentence for nearly murdering a woman in public.
Yeah. That's it? Yeah. What the fuck?
And this was a second charge that he was actually in prison for. Of course, it was that woman that he, like, had raped or tried to rape. And then a second time, it happened again where he used the sidewalk as a deadly weapon. So he was pounding this woman's face onto the floor. It's Holy this fuck. Sentence that he only received 9 years in prison.
What the actual?
Can someone for explain rape in public to me why, like, attempted murder? That's attempted murder.
That's yeah. attempted murder.
Why in don't public. They do like
in public
life sentences for attempted murder?
Because you know it's they're so going to continue.
I don't know, Janae. I don't know, Janae. I really don't know.
Like, because, unless it's
okay,
like
get into this. Exactly. Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Because they don't want to take things case by case. They don't. They're going to be like, I don't have the time to do that. When we could be doing so much prevention work here. What the fuck?
You guys, we're going to ask that question for the rest of our lives. Oh, but boy. He was released, scarily enough, 2 months after Bittaker was. He moves in with his mother again in a trailer park in L.A. and lands an all right gig as an electrician because of his military background. And then get this, Bittaker is also living in LA as a machinist, getting paid six figures. And yeah, these fuckers landed pretty cush gigs after they were both convicted of attempted murder. I'm just like, what? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Do the people do the background checks on these people, see if they have any charges?
No.
Like, oh,
no, they
you
don't
know,
care.
Murders
actually.
On this. That sounds like somebody I want to hire.
They're like, he was in the military, but he was discharged for quote unquote medical leave, aka sexual assault. He's so lucky that they didn't put that on his record, dude. In February 1979, they both meet downtown at a bar, and they're talking about their sick fantasies, and they solidified their plan. So logistically, their first goal was to buy a van. Bittaker bought a GMC 1977 cargo van. They bought it because it had sliding doors and they planned to snatch girls off the street.
Like Mirror Headlight?
Yeah.
Same thing?
They named their van Murder Mac out of respect for LA's notorious duo, the Hillside Stranglers.
Out of respect.
Literally, that's like what he said.
You named your van?
Yeah. What the fuck?
A tribute to scum of earth like myself.
Yes.
And I think this is where that whole, like, the van, you know, kind of, like, the void van started. Because it happened so often. They'd be like, hey, do you want to come smoke weed in my van? And, like, sometimes it would just be dudes with weed in the van. Other times it's dudes with fucking weapons and wanting to kill you. Yeah. So, yeah, let's just not get in people's vans. Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah.
And even just, like, despite Scooby-Doo, as awesome as they were, but...
Don't get
in the mystery van.
Definitely not the mystery machine.
I don't know. If somebody came up to me in the mystery
with
machine, I'd be like,
Shaggy? Me too, dude. I would too. Anyway. So they literally hunted their victims. And they used radio as a tool to drown out their screams of their victims. So, like, the whole thing with this van, they thought out perfectly. So I want to point that out, too. They knew exactly what they were doing and exactly what they were trying to avoid in terms of the law. Makes me want to vomit. And it's here where I recommend leaving if you feel uneasy about the details of their crimes. Because I am going to start listing off the murders that we know of these two bitches. For 3 months, these ex-cons cruised down the Pacific coast on highways to pull off on beaches to find, talk, and photograph girls. They pretended to be supermodel photographers and pretended to be a lot of fun. Would give fake names. They would offer them drinks and drugs. And when they were eventually arrested, police found over 500 photos of girls. Most of them were unidentifiable, so we don't know if they were actual victims or not, because we weren't able to find all of the bodies of their victims that we know of. The ones that Norris was willing to talk about. Anyway. they just needed a place to rape and torture their victims in secrecy, and hadn't begun until they finally found it. It was in Glendora, California, on this hill, where they found an area that had a fence already built around it. Bittaker put his own lock on this fence and literally was like, this is where we can avoid being caught by police. So just again, wanted to remind you, they're very, very thoughtfully planning this out, right, step by step.
It's meticulous.
Jesus. It's meticulous. And yeah, it's terrifying. So they wanted to minimize their ability of getting caught. So yes, they are in their right mind. They installed a bed in the van. Again, vomit. So they had a cooler in the van, spare clothes, and a selection of tools in a toolbox. The 20-mile stretch of the coast from Redondo Beach to Santa Monica was their perverse hunting ground. On June 24th, 1979, they claimed their first victim, 16-year-old Cindy Schaefer. They, for some reason, wanted to kill a 16-year-old first. I don't know why or how they know accurately how to spot their age.
That's fucking weird,
right?
Mm. I don't fuck with that.
Yeah.
She was leaving a church group meeting after she was walking. I know, dude. It's fucking heartbreaking, dude. My heart goes out to these victims. I actually am, like, using that perspective as important to delivering this information to you, like, so that those types of cases are not forgotten, so that we mention those names and how important it is that it happens frequently. Anyway, they drove up and they asked her if she was on her way from her she was going to her grandmother's from church. Her grandmother had dropped her off, actually.
So they were watching her.
They were expecting her, for sure. So anyway, no, they drove up and asked if she wanted a ride and asked if she wanted to smoke some weed. And she just said, no, 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 you know, kept walking. They got out of the van, basically, and kidnapped her and drove her away. She's very small, this girl. She's screaming, she's yelling, and they use the radio to drown out her screams. This is their first attempt, and it's kind of messy when you think about their future attempts. Both men argue once they get to their, you know, secluded area, which is pretty interesting of a long drive. You would think that, you know, someone had to have heard them driving anyway, but they get to their secluded area, and both men are arguing about who is to have their first private time with their prisoner. Bittaker agrees that Norris may have his private time first, which is interesting. After that, the two rape and torture Cindy for the rest of the night. So nobody can hear her. And she's outside in the woods. Cindy realized that this was not going to end well for her. She asked Norris if they were going to kill her and requested to pray before they do, at least. And they did not allow her to pray. Sorry, I'm, like, getting really sad right now.
No, it's okay. No one's cried on the podcast yet, so.
Just, like,
you're first. No, it's rough. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, what kind of monster denies someone their last moments?
That, like, sends chills down my spine. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Norris attempts to strangle Cindy and fails. Bittaker then attempts to do so himself. So, for some reason, Norris can't go through with killing her. Prison, when the two had arranged these plans, like I had mentioned, they agreed to murder their victims, but Norris almost thought they were kidding about this part.
Do you think he was not capable of murdering them?
I don't think
Or do you think that,
I think Norris is so fearful of women. If we were able to look into his, like, life with his mom, I imagine there was a lot of humiliation with his mom, even though there's not, I don't fucking think that's an excuse. Like, you're humiliated, big fucking whoop, we all are. But, I would think that he's very, very afraid of women. Like, there's this other case I'm about to cover, well, this other crime that they did.
He just wanted to be a serial rapist instead.
It's about the dominance and sex for him, mostly. I would say that he's a rapist, and Bittaker is more of a sexual sadist.
Like a murderer.
Like
though.
A
like
murderer.
Into the torture aspect.
Like, he's a sexual sadist.
By, like, doing all of it.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
He's
no,
the one
sense.
Talking the most in the tapes.
Well, and like what I heard in that is exactly what Kenzie just said.
What
he hates
say?
Women.
Yeah.
It's not even just that he's afraid. It's that he hates them.
Yeah.
His hatred is rooted
in
the
fear. Yeah.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. So Bittaker was extremely violent. Although Norris had his fair share of violent attacks prior to meeting Larry, he was not nearly as violent and never killed his victims. And until here, like, I don't know. We don't know if these people have murdered before these crimes. Yeah. Like, they could very well have. They're obviously talking about how they enjoy doing that together, but we don't know of those crimes. They were not convicted of those crimes. So keep that in mind. Like, they've been practicing this well ahead of meeting each other. Mm-hmm. When Norris had trouble killing Cindy with force, he decided to use... Oh, sorry, when Bittaker had trouble killing Cindy with force, because they were just trying to strangle her, he decided to use some tools in his toolbox. Gross. He resected the coat hanger and used it to wrap around Cindy's neck to strangle her by using vice grip pliers to tighten it.
Jesus.
That's brutal.
We've never fucking seen something like that.
No.
That's so smart. Like, I wouldn't even, like, I'm sorry. That's disgusting. Yeah. It's not, I don't mean that in a good way. I just, like, it takes a very intelligent person to know how to do that. And to kill someone properly that way, like, must take a lot of strength.
Yeah.
You think they would go.
Terrifying. Yeah. Yeah. Intelligently terrifying.
That they would, like, go first for, like, I have tools in here that I can literally stab somebody with. And instead he chooses to do that.
Right. Yeah. Or exactly.
Somebody
yeah.
With.
Right.
That would cause them
anything.
To be out or something.
And he chooses to do that. Like, something so weird, right? He's just, like, looking to get creative. That's where I keep saying he's a sexual sadist, because there's, like, this certain level of fun for him. Like, it's creative for him.
It makes me wonder if it's, like, a form of art to him.
It is. I think you're right about that. Yeah. Because it wouldn't be the same as so just
gross.
Killing someone, right? Yeah. That's what makes this the worst case, is because that was the whole point. They can easily murder someone, you know?
Right.
But anyway, after Cindy's murder, the two began discovering their reliance on one another. They fed off of each other's anger, almost like alter egos, and felt more empowered and confident when Norris felt more empowered and confident when Bittaker took the lead, and then Norris followed. So they were kind of playing off of that dynamic. This led the two to doing more vile acts than they would have done alone. After Cindy's murder, the two began discovering their reliance on one another. They fed off of each other's anger, almost like alter egos, and felt more empowered and confident when Bittaker took the lead and Norris followed. This led to the two of them doing more vile acts than they would do alone together. Cindy's grandmother called the police, and unfortunately, the case went cold, which excited the two of them even more. They would wait out the period of, like, a month or two after each victim to see if anything actually happened.
So, the, like, were they into the, like, media attention of their cases?
Yep. Classic, right?
Gross.
At the end, when they found a lot of their stuff in the van, they found that they had a lot of police broadcasting channels.
Mm, of course.
So they were keeping a high eye on whether they had any evidence, any leads, all that stuff. And when they realized that the case was cold, they began to hunt for their second victim, 18-year-old Andrea Hall, a hitchhiker in July 1979. Norris had been hiding under the bed when they picked up Andrea, which I think they're becoming more creative in ways that they can do this. And they would even take, like, different approaches to how they pretend to be someone they're not. She was from Ohio and was very poor. She had even sold her blood for some income, and she needed a ride, and had no idea what she got herself into. She was offered a drink, and she was kind of larger than the previous victims. Like, she was taller girl, and she was stronger. Norris almost felt that she would beat him up when he finally popped up under the fucking bed. They took her to their secret spot in the mountains, and Norris was able to rape her only once, because I think she intimidated him, being able to fight him off. So, I imagine he was a bit, intimidated by her. She was tormented. This poor girl was kidnapped by two sexual sadists. Bittaker chose to take a souvenir from this victim. This was the first time he decided to photograph Andrea and their crimes towards her. This whole time they had already been recording their heinous, like, little situations there, but this is the first time they actually took a picture. So
all of the, like, all their victims are pretty much documented, and every horrible thing that happened to them is documented.
Yeah.
Cool.
And great. The people investigating these crimes had to listen to them. And the first person who did was a well, you know, seasoned person of the court. He had been through the ringer a fuckload of times. And he had to listen to it about 9 times until he was able to get through the tape without becoming emotional.
Wow. I could not do a job like that.
No.
Oh, no.
Before murdering Andrea, Bittaker forced her to list off the reasons why he should spare her life. Wow. Notice asshole. How much he enjoys being in control of a human life. He said the reasons she had listed were not good enough and jammed an ice pick in both of her ears and strangled her.
Jesus.
Her body was thrown over a cliff close to where they had left Cindy.
So they were just piling up victims.
Yeah, wow. They couldn't like find Cindy's body.
Yeah, because they knew where they were
yeah,
at.
Yeah, think of all those photos that they had.
Oh,
after 2 months of waiting, they found their next victims. This time it was Jackie Gilliam, 15 years old, and Leah Lamp, 13 years old.
Oh my God, they're children!
Both of them were waiting at the bus stop to go to the beach. Wow. Bittaker and Norris offered the two girls a ride to the beach, and they accepted the offer. The girls noticed Bittaker was not pulling over at the beach, and he claimed to be finding a place to smoke some pot. The girl demanded to be let out of the van. Norris then hit Leah as hard as he could with a sock full of BBs on top of her head and knocked her out.
Oh, my God.
And Leah was the 13-year-old. She was a bit bigger than the 15-year-old girl. She was on the, you know, curvy side. Mm-hmm. So he probably put her out first so she wouldn't attack him.
Okay.
Because he's a bitch.
Because he's a bitch.
He started wrestling Jackie and couldn't really get her under control. So Norris is breaking down a bit. Like, he doesn't really... He's not fully. The head's not in the game at this point. Bittaker hit her so hard.
And the fear you can tell, too, oh, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. He's willing to wrestle a 15-year-old girl that he wrestle. Can't... Like,
yeah.
He can't handle no. it.
Yeah.
And let's remember his first time trying to rape a woman and her being unconscious. It's like, it's weird. Like, he wants them to fight back, but in this enclosed area where he has less control
right, over it,
he can't do it. So it's very interesting the way the roles are playing here, right? You see Bittaker taking the lead a lot more. So they pull over so that Bittaker can actually hit the girl in the face. And at this point, they are noticed by a tennis player.
Hmm.
Yeah, a tennis player notices them and sees them, and Bittaker just says, oh, she's just having a bad LSD trip. Gets back in the car and drives off. Literally, that's it.
What?
Yeah, okay, nothing was reported after that.
Whoa. I'm sorry. I would have followed that car.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
You didn't report it?
I'm just going to remind you guys again. If you hear something, say something. Call the cops.
Fucking like, Lord, call somebody. Dude. Write the fucking license plate. Like, literally anything that you
even
could do. Like, just write
sure.
their fucking appearances down.
Yeah. Even if you're not sure, it's like, if it's something bad happening, like, at least the police will have a record something happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, like, even if nothing bad is happening, then
you did something.
You did something. And, yeah, like, no nothing's going to happen to those people in right. most cases, unless they're people of color. But,
yeah.
But,
fuck
I
this. Still stand on that fucking see something, say something. Intervene yep. however you can. Mm-hmm. If
whatever
that means
is safe
cops,
for you.
Cool.
Yeah.
If that means you feel comfortable following a fucking car until you can know that that person is safe, cool.
Firstly, yeah. that girl's 15. Yeah. Like, you think she's old enough to do LSD with this grown man?
Regardless, if she's right. having an LSD trip and they're not doing something about it, wouldn't you think, oh, maybe I should call a paramedic or something?
Right. Yeah.
So neither man is sexually attracted to Leah, quote unquote, because they feel she's overweight.
Oh.
So they do not rape Leah, which is like, it's fucked up that they rape them anyway, but it's fucked up that they put her through that and have them, like, have her watch her friend Jackie mm-hmm. have to go through this, kind of with that guilt of like, oh my God, you
what
know.
What do I do?
Yeah.
Survivor's guilt, right?
13 yeah. years old. Bittaker chose to record the tape of Jackie. And she's forced to pretend to enjoy it. Norris then makes Jackie pretend she is his cousin. Fuck these guys. They then feel comfortable enough to fall asleep next to the girls who are bound. So that's interesting. Like,
that's another level of control.
It's a yeah. definite level of control.
Wow. Ugh. Fuck Les.
I'm sorry. And this is the PG-13 version, you guys. Oh. Like, just keeping that in mind. Like, I am not, I glossed over what actually happened to these people. Their attacks are escalating and becoming more and more boundary pushing since the two want to maintain the level of defiance and degradation. They find it so fucking empowering. And that's what I hate so much about law enforcement, is that the more you don't find them, the more you even try to find them publicly, the more fire you're giving them to their fuel. Like, our fuel to the fire, goddammit. That's what I'm saying. It's like, they watch us scramble to find them, listen to us trying to find them, find everything we find. And they love it. They love every second of it.
Damn. Were you going to say something? Have you guys ever seen the show on Netflix, Don't Fuck With Cats?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's what that reminds me of.
I actually had a friend post that she saw something like that again.
Yeah, I saw it too. It's
coming
a
out again.
Yeah. Being stomped on.
Fuck you guys.
So if you see a little gray kitty on Facebook, don't watch that video, because it's a cat getting its legs stomped on.
Yep.
And it's just as those videos are, is exactly how these men treated people. Human beings. Women. Young girls. In the morning, Bittaker turned to 13-year-old Leah and forces her to strip. He then made her pose in various sexual positions and took photographs. After a while, he began to continue to torture and sexual assault the girls and killed Jackie first. Leia tried to escape, and he killed her with a sledgehammer.
Oh my god. Oh,
sorry.
That's what I meant by the tools sound brutal. Like bad words to me now.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. I can see that. That's brutal, though. The amount of force, too, that would take.
Oh my god. That's
it's a visceral tool already.
It's unnecessary. Mm-hmm.
It's primal. It's a primal.
Yeah.
And how
way
fucking
of hurting
dare
somebody
yes.
before? Oh my god, this whole thing is just fucked. There's justice at the end of the tunnel, you guys.
Thank
I promise
fuck
you.
For
I
one
promise
season.
You. There's justice at the end of the tunnel. The most terrible injustice to these girls, though, the police told their parents they were just runaways, and did not conduct a search for the girls.
Oh,
like
Jesus
you
Christ.
Could fucking have them tortured.
The
you can have
fuck?
Them gone through all of this shit. And then you, the people we rely on to get them justice, said that it wasn't worth it to look into it because they were runaways.
And that's not uncommon, right?
No.
That
it's
in
not.
So
especially
many
back
cases.
Then, I feel like.
That's why
yeah,
the Runaways with
now.
Joan Jett is such a badass name for a band.
Yeah. That's
but
true.
Also, yeah.
Yeah. That is a badass name. But no, I mean, even now, right? They were like, oh, they were into drugs? Well, fuck them.
Yeah.
They're not important anyway. And
yeah.
It's
they
like,
were 15 and 13 without any, like, behavioral
right.
issues.
But that's
at
what
all.
I'm saying, though. And then, like,
yeah.
if that doesn't tell you how we value people
mm-hmm.
in this country, then
yep.
fucking nothing will.
Nothing will. That's poetic justice, ain't it? Anyway, on September 30th, Bittaker and Norris kidnapped Shirley Sanders, their first victim to escape. There
nice.
Is not a lot of information I could find about this case, but she was maced in the face, put in the van, and raped, but she was able to identify them for police.
Good.
Cool.
Yeah.
It took a long time, though, for that to get anywhere. They were able to get another victim around Halloween. So about a
of
month
course.
Later.
Yeah.
Yeah. This time, the two went beyond their usual highway, and as now they feel absolutely unstoppable. They were going place to place. Now they're good to go.
Right.
Bittaker and Norris recognize 18-year-old Lynette Ledford, their next victim. She was sort of stranded after she had come back from a Halloween party and an argument with her boyfriend. So much dependency on men in this case, you know, it's like a lot of that we see. That was like a lot of times. Yes.
It's the socialization thing, right?
It is the socialization
especially
thing.
Especially back in the day of like, yeah, this person's going to protect me because why would they hurt me?
He's going to pick me up, drop me off, take care of me at the party.
Yep.
And they were hurting her and she probably left a very toxic relationship just to find some fucking murderers.
Yep.
She was recognized by Bittaker in particular because he was a regular at the restaurant she worked at. She accepts their offer to go home because he's like, let me take you home. Once she's in the van, Bittaker decides he does not want to waste time by driving back to their secret killing space. In my opinion, this is just one more layer of excitement to push the boundaries of their direction.
Yeah.
Their discretion.
And, like, honestly, a bad choice if you're trying not to get caught.
That's the thing. I think they don't give a fuck at this point because they
I
know they're not
like
going to.
At this time, it's more like catch me if you can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like above the law. Honestly.
Yep. Yeah. Precisely. Like Bittaker
yeah.
especially is the one who finds it sexually arousing.
Okay.
To be able to do it closer and closer to people in public.
That doesn't surprise
so
me.
Fucked up.
No. because it's been a game for them since the beginning, and now, like, listening to the radio, knowing that nothing's coming up, it's like...
I just want to keep this in mind, too. They were not caught by law enforcement. No, they were not caught. You're going to hear how they were caught, and they were not caught by law enforcement. So he was not wrong that he could get away with this. I just want to put that out there. Lynette endures hours of endless torture until Bittaker suggests Norris kill her. He keeps thinking, like, why the fuck aren't you killing him, dude? Like, I've been doing the rest, you know? So Norris kills her with a wire hanger. Again. Copycat of Bittaker's original.
Yeah, he couldn't even come up with an idea.
No, he couldn't. This time, they brazenly and carelessly toss Lynette's body on a lawn in a suburban neighborhood.
What?
Oh my god. Right, catch me if
they
I can.
Don't
like,
give
catch
a
me
fuck
if you can.
Anymore.
Oh. They've never given two shits the whole time. I mean, at first, they were like, yeah, we got to be really careful. Then they realized, like, months goes on. And their first victim
no
was months, like,
shit,
almost
women,
half
right.
a year ago. Right? They're killing young girls.
Sorry. And they haven't even found
Thank
any
you.
Of the bodies.
I keep saying women.
They're
under
girls,
18. They're
under 18.
Thank
you. Yeah. And I mean, like, fucking Cindy's grandma.
Yeah.
Called. What the fuck happened? Where's she went missing from church group.
Yeah.
Two fucking blocks away,
well,
you know?
I brought her, yeah.
Yeah. So, and nobody from church group saw either. I'm just like, this is just like falling through our fingertips like sand. Like, this is how it feels. Anyway, again, thrilled at the fact that they'd been getting away with all these murders, a jogger found Lynette's body and an autopsy was finally performed on her body. Which is great. Finally, we get some sort of...
Wait, whose body?
Lynette, okay. Their recent victim.
The one that
girl
just tossed on
the
lawn.
Waiter, the waitress,
the
one that
got
thrown
on
the
lawn.
Okay, okay. Yeah, so they were able to find her.
Sorry, is it because they could not find bodies beforehand? Like, where they were putting them was
right,
inaccessible.
Like, it's
to
inaccessible.
My next question
yeah.
was whether the gate was locked. That was, like, private property, I'm assuming. Like, they bought that land.
That's
because
exactly what I was thinking.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Because at this point, Bittaker's, like, winning six figures. No, there's no mention of them buying that land.
What?
Yeah,
so
they
I'm
just
assuming
found
that
it,
people,
right?
Yeah, they just found it, and he put a fucking lock
so
on it.
They just assume
I'm assuming people
privately.
Don't go there often. Like, I mean, there's like tons of places in Colorado.
Yeah,
like,
that's
you're
true.
Not even
yeah.
going
like,
near
some
your
people just
property.
Buy land and they just go and check on it once or twice.
That's
a
why
year.
It's very
oh,
important
yeah. okay,
for you to explain these things to your neighbors. Because, like, had someone known that, like, that person who owns that property was
is
not it? There,
right.
why
yeah.
is there a lock on it? A lot of red flags go up. That's why I appreciate communities that really do consider, like, what's happening with their neighbors
mm-hmm.
and who's around them,
right?
Because that was their one spot. And
right.
they got rid of the girls by throwing them over a cliff. So, like, we couldn't even, like,
couldn't
it's probably down there. Yeah.
yeah.
So, firstly, these girls vanished from thin air. And no witnesses, you know, or there were witnesses. And it's just, like, such a lapsed time. That's why
yeah.
it's so loud and, like, socially acceptable to hitchhike.
Right.
That's why these girls trust these men.
Right.
Well,
it's another thing of, like, well, it's not my business, so I'll stay out of it. And, no,
yeah.
it's your business. If you hear someone screaming and they're being hurt, that's your
like,
business.
Save their fucking
yeah.
life. Do something.
I
do
can,
something.
I just
yes.
think about the times where I've been in, like, doctor's offices and dentist's offices or the store and seeing how a parent treats their child.
Oh, my God.
And, like, because I'm from a Hispanic culture, like, we don't say anything to
no.
the moms,
that's fair.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
think
it
that. And we just,
thing.
It is a cultural thing. You don't tell them anything. And
right.
for very well, like, that's their form of punishment. I don't know.
Right.
And, yeah, and they're
no,
like,
I
when does
that,
that become
yeah.
a fine line of, like,
right.
discipline
yeah.
versus
right.
abuse? I don't know. It's always abuse, maybe.
and, like, for me, that's true, right? Like,
right.
and, like, who, as a person who grew up in white culture where that's not a fucking problem, I have no problem being like, hey, stop fucking
no,
hitting
definitely.
Your child
right.
in public.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
But I did not consider that cultural aspect of, like,
you,
you're
just
right.
Don't
like,
say
you don't get involved.
Mm-hmm. I don't
yeah.
get involved.
Right.
I mean, it's just like when you're at their house, you know? So, like,
yes.
you don't know the difference of, like,
right.
when you're at
yeah.
a supermarket, you
well,
know?
Yeah. And then there's, like, there's the multiple
point.
Layered parts of, like, if you are from, like, a Mexican family, like, a lot of. A lot of discipline is abuse,
right?
At least in
right.
my own personal experience.
To an extent,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and, like, even then, you're like, I'm not going to talk back to my parents because that's just what you're raised with.
Right.
And that's oh, different in white culture.
Right.
Of, like, you might
yeah.
stand up for yourself. That all depends on your family.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
like, also that extends to,
and I mean,
it's
like
other people's business. So we don't deal with other families' businesses because we don't
yeah.
talk
right.
about it.
And let's
that
take it
sense.
A step further about
yeah.
relationship violence, right? I
yeah.
get this all the time about the fucking Lorena Bobbitt fucking case. I get that all the time. Why didn't she just leave? Oh, you know, why the fuck didn't I think about that? It's more dangerous for them to leave.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
If they try,
it's more
right?
terrifying for people to leave than it is to stay in it.
Yeah. Well, and
yeah.
statistically, right, Naomi and I coming from that background, yeah, You're not going to fucking leave if your partner's going to hunt you down and murder you.
Yeah.
Why the fuck would you leave? At least you know what you're getting into here.
Well, you know where he's always at.
Yeah.
And you know what's going to happen to you because you're used to it.
And culturally, if you come from a background where, like, it's really frowned upon to divorce your husband or partner.
Right. Yes. Exactly. That was so, important to her.
You not only receive... You're now in danger. You also receive shame from your family or from your culture.
From all ends.
And that's a whole other thing that we don't take into account.
No, we don't.
Is that there's so much culture embedded into who we are as people in each relationship that adds things that, like, maybe it's not a problem for you, but it's a problem for that person.
Yeah. Or just, maybe, like, people of color being submissive.
Money for the entire house.
Yep. In very dominating fucking place.
Yep.
So many reasons here, you guys. But all I'm saying, it's not that easy. Like, you tell me in a situation, there's a case I'm going to cover here soon where a girl was forced into sex trade and she killed someone because he showed her the guns. Anyway, like, you tell me what you would do in that situation and then fucking come back to me and tell me that it's that easy to fucking leave.
Yes. Can I say one
thing?
Yes. I just, like, really appreciate in this podcast in particular, I don't hear it happen in a lot of other podcasts because they're not multiracial. I appreciate your willingness to check my privilege in these situations and not treat me like shit behind it.
No, not at all.
I want to be better. I want to be a better ally, and I appreciate the willingness to be like, hey, you didn't consider this thing.
And I mean, like, it's not even that, right? It's like a lot of self-reflection on our end of, like, what exactly is my thought process here and why don't I step in those situations? Mm-hmm. And you think, because, like, if anyone stepped up to my mom in that situation, get their ass beat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. And, like, even I come from a white family, and that was very much like, you don't fucking hit your mother. Mm, like, straight up, if I would have backhanded my mom, she would have kicked my ass.
You'd be murdered.
Yeah, there's no way in hell. So, like, well, but I do notice that in a lot of white families where that's totally fine. Yeah. However you talk to the people around you is totally okay because you're entitled.
And it's not just you. It's also like...
Oh, my God.
People don't take that into consideration when they are in this line of work where they're like, well, they and also people that have nothing to do with the situation. You can't just tell someone not to, like, to leave because that's not the case. There's so much stuff. And it's like... Even people in this line of work, unfortunately, that we are in, they don't consider that. Nope. They don't take in the cultural aspect. Nope. And that's so frustrating. And we need more people of color in this line of work or people who are culturally informed.
Competent. Well, and let's connect this to this case. None of their victims were people of color.
Nope.
And I want to point out that it's because of this objectification that we do on women that these guys are so far from our concept of, like, women as people. They are literally taking into consideration society's expectations of what is an attractive woman, and that's who they're going for, right? It doesn't have anything to do with who they believe is sexually appealing. Well, I just want to point that out.
That and also, like, they're treating them more so like subjects more
it's
an object.
Objects.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, it's my right thing. It's disgusting.
Oh, absolutely.
And okay, so 3 weeks had passed without a lead on the case, okay, on any of these cases. It is only because of Norris and Bittaker's big ass mouths to a friend of theirs in prison. Wrong person to tell, because they fucking go around boasting about their crimes and their fucking murders to this friend. And guess what? He has two daughters himself. And it doesn't sit right with him. Good. And he goes to his fucking lawyer because he told him he thinks that Bittaker is coveting his daughter in a certain unnatural way. And he tells them about these things that they've told him. So the victim who had escaped a while back before these past two murders, the police were able to collaborate with her and identify the van.
Amazing. Yes.
So guess the fuck what? It was not police's. No, you are lucky that there was a prisoner who decided to speak to police. Like, this is why it's so important to be rat. I'm sorry, I'm just gonna say it. Like, we need you to rat your friends out because this helped so many victims, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, I know they're gonna get killed.
And we need fucking law enforcement to believe survivors.
Believe survivors. Like, Jesus, believe survivors. I'm gonna get that fucking tattooed on my fucking forehead. Like, believe survivors. It doesn't matter if it's your friend, if it's your fucking coworker, or your daughter. Like, if they tell you something, you fucking believe them. You don't care about what happened past that. You believe them.
Sorry.
And don't completely ignore them if they are not female either.
Yes,
that can happen to people,
men,
anyone,
anybody, straight up. Yeah, believe survivors,
children,
regardless of their identity.
Yes.
Basically, the police didn't know where to find Bittaker, but they closely watched Norris, who immediately.
Wait.
broke the law.
Did this guy just disappear? Where'd he go?
Bittaker? Yeah. So I think that, like, him and Norris only got together, like, after the coast was clear, and it must have been, like, a phone call of, like, hey, come and meet me here, and we'll go ahead and do our shit. Like, they were smart. Like I said, they weren't, like, every day, like, us, you know.
You keep harping on, right, that they knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Does someone try to use a insanity defense later? Is that where you're getting?
Question. No. Mm. No. No, I just want to prove that, they're not a monster and not a boogeyman. They're a fucking human being. And it could be your fucking brother. It could be your dad. It could be your teacher. They're not different from us, is all I'm saying. That's why I'm saying, like,
no, I hear you know? You. I was just curious.
And Richard Ramirez, too. You know, I thought this whole time, you were explaining me that curse. Sorry. That's for later time.
That's okay.
But the whole time, I just kept thinking, like, no, he couldn't be doing this in his right mind. There's no way he has a shred of sanity. And I'm wrong. They do. So painful about it. That's actually what makes them so good at what they do. And even the people who, like, examined them once they're finally arrested even said, they were like, she was like, they're so normal.
Well, that's the thing, too. And when we get to cases where, like, they really didn't have sanity, which the one that comes to my head is Andrea Yates, who murdered her five children because she had postpartum psychosis.
Yeah.
Like, not that that's a reason to murder your kids. No, but she was struggling through some shit, right? Like,
she was not in control of her actions.
No.
We don't offer support to mothers after childbirth either.
Oh, no. So it's like, fuck up. And then the father just being like, just keep popping out babies. That's
fine. And look at how much fucking tolerance these fuckers got versus how we treat those kinds of cases. They got so many chances, and so many people noticed that they were fucking danger to society. And guess what? They did nothing. They did nothing. So fuck off. You don't know shit about this. Don't go into it until you know about mental health. Anyway, so immediately once police were following Norris, they catch him weighing out pounds of marijuana into tiny baggies.
Man. Of course they do.
And I was like,
that's the thing.
Me and my partner were like, what the fuck? Is he a drug dealer too? We're like, I don't know. They never mentioned it. Like, why the fuck was he doing this? So I could, like, only think of two things. Like, he was preparing the tiny weed bags for, like, their hunting purposes. You know, like, look at this bag of weed I got for you. That's what I could, think.
That
was
makes
like,
sense.
I think he's making props. Goodie bags or something. And then
goodie bags for your murder.
Yeah. Basically, I thought it was a way to, like,
fish reuse them.
They literally did that. And that's what got their victims in. And so they got him on parole violation for that. But they searched his vehicles, their vehicle, and found everything.
Yeah,
there was nothing. Guess what they found first? They found the torture tape of Andrea.
They're like, let's just keep this in the car. That sounds like
Bittaker had misplaced it. He was looking for it. How fucking crazy is that? Because we would have been in a different situation, y'all. We would, if they didn't have that tape, there would have been nothing but suggestive evidence.
Right.
There would have been nothing circumstantial. Right. Yeah. So thank God he had misplaced that tape. Anyway, Bittaker calls Norris during this time, once the police have finally arrested him. And a police officer answers the phone and pretends to be a friend. Like, what?
Wait, doesn't Norris have one friend?
He doesn't have any
friends. Exactly. Yeah. So obviously Bittaker realizes this is a trap and tries to hide his horror tapes in the fields of the Hollywood Hills.
God.
How fucking weird would that be, right? You're walking along and you just find this fucking tape of God.
Oh, I wouldn't even play it.
Horror. Oh,
I would immediately be like, this is a cursed tape and something's going to come out of my TV at me.
Right.
So Bittaker is ambushed by police in his hotel and appears to cooperate with their search. So he's like, yeah, I also have lots of photos over here. It was weird.
Wait.
Yeah.
Was he? I'm guessing he was trying to get a lighter sentence of being like, oh, yeah, let me just provide you.
So he
just
basically being sold himself out.
I think what had happened was he thought he was going to pull one over on the police and be like, oh, look at
me. I'm holding these for a friend.
I'm an innocent white man. Anyway. So police search the van and then find those broadcasting Lynette's torture tape. On January 1981, Bittaker goes to trial. Unlike Norris was basically like the fucking tattletale of everything. Helped them find the bodies, led a police force task search, you know, to find these bodies. And they only found, they found Leah and the girl that was murdered with her, Jackie. Mm-hmm. And then they also found one more girl. It was the second one, the 18-year-old, Andrea. Mm-hmm. So they found her, but they weren't able to find Cindy or, what's her name? Lynette, mm-hmm. the last victim.
And these are the only known cases?
Yeah, these are the only known cases.
Like, oh, there are a ton. Yeah.
I imagine that Norris really just told the ones that he felt more responsible in. Mm-hmm. And Bittaker still denied it. Like I said, he denied it until the day he died. But he was sentenced to death and was on death row until February this year, of course. Also, Norris, he's alive. He was allowed to parole, to apply for parole, appeal for parole in 2010 and was denied.
Good.
Thank God. He's eligible to appeal again in 2029.
Okay, let's not let that motherfucker Mm-mm. out. Huh?
Yeah, let's not.
Maybe no?
Just absolutely not.
You had lots of chances before, so...
So if you thought this was bad, just imagine what it was actually like.
Yeah, yeah. with all the details and shit.
And what happened to those girls. Anyway, you know, don't fucking go into strange vans and probably don't buy a van anymore, you know?
Don't just hitchhike. Bad.
Or yeah. Don't hitchhike. Please don't hitchhike. I know it's like bad.
By yourself. Right. Like have a buddy.
Which is scary though. Like it's shitty to think that we have to tell people not to walk alone.
Yeah, no, and how about this?
How about this instead? Don't murder safety. People.
Yeah, don't murder. Yeah.
Can you respect people's fucking boundaries?
And right.
If you were considering murdering people, how about punching yourself in the dick first? No, I'm just kidding.
Go to therapy, bro.
Go to therapy, dude. And if you're a fucking therapist, when you know, I know you fucking know, when you have someone who's dangerous, do something. All right, that's it. Toolbox killers. Not to be confused with the toy box killers, which I'm not ever covering.
I mean, we might do it at some point, but honestly, it is so brutal that I don't know we can.
I used really, you know, strong words in this one that yes. I felt a lot of, but yeah, at least we're not going into the
yeah. degree.
I just well, said yeah. the way they died and what had happened to them before. That's yeah. it.
No, I appreciate that.
Anyway,
respect.
Peace out.
Come back next week, y'all.
Bye.
If you haven't already, give us a 5-star review Please. On Apple Podcasts.
Look Please. At what I have to go through just for your entertainment.
The least you can do is give us a 5-star review.
Y'all. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Would be pretty cool.
Go Bye. Check out our Instagram. Go we'll check out our Instagram Twitter. Twitter.
Twitter.
Our Twitter. Not a boogeyman. If you have a story for us, please share. We want to hear your fucked up stories at notmonsterednotaboogeyman@gmail.com. Come back next week. Naomi's got some fucked up shit for you.
So much fucked up shit. I less cry today. I might cry on this one. Just heads up.
All right. Forgot Come back next week, today. Y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.